Blog Talk Radio. Does anybody know what really is going on here? Now, for the record, I believe Armstrong is 1,000% guilty of taking steroids. I just don't see any other way. I don't care how hard he trains. I don't care how hard he trains or what he does with his regiment that you can win seven straight Tour de Frances at his advanced age. And you know, and like Barry Bonds, I'll give you the same Barry Bonds theory. Getting better while you're getting older. That just doesn't add up. Makes no sense. Makes no sense in sports. It just you don't get better. You don't get older. You don't get better in the twilight stages of your career. Now, in your prime years when you get older, in your prime years of your career, athletic career, that's one thing. But in the twilight ages where you're supposed to be on the decline, you don't get better. It doesn't make any sense. In the history of sports, for the most part, there's proven there's been some steroids or something illegal behind guys, Barry Bonds, Lance Armstrong, just to name a few. But again, this whole situation is just it's puzzling because to me there's a sense of the USADA and UCI trying to me fighting over who caught Armstrong first. Not so much in terms of trying to clean up the sport. Matter of fact, those two organizations were fighting over the jurisdiction of this case, which tells you about their motives. About what they're all about. Not about cleaning up the sport. They care less about cycling. It's like, we got them. No, we got them. No, you got them. We got them. No, we got them. And Armstrong comes out and says, you know what? I'm done with it. I'm done. I'm tired of this. Leave me alone. I'm not fighting anymore. That's it. I'm done. Which is to me admitting guilt because they're not taking away my titles. If I'm innocent, you're gonna have to just like I'm taking the Barry Bonds approach. Like you're going to take these titles from my cold dead hands. I mean, Barry Bonds still has not admitted to taking steroids willingly, unknowingly. Still says the steroid he took was without knowledge that he was taking it. To this day, to this minute. But again, I can't take cycling seriously. I mean, who runs cycling? Nobody. It's like again, it's just like boxing. They are as corrupt of an organization as there is in all the sports. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll have some Saturday morning headlines. We will be right back on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Minutes after the 11 o'clock hour on this latest edition of Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, Saturday Morning Headlines. The Dodgers and Red Sox are about to pull off probably the biggest trade in a long time. A deal that's going to change the face of the Red Sox without question. It's going to become official probably later on today. Dodgers will get Adrian Gonzalez, Josh Beckett, Carl Crawford, and Nick Punto. Red Sox will get basically James Loney and a bunch of prospects. I mean, this is all about money. And if you're a Red Sox fan, I don't think you have to worry about your team becoming, pinching pennies all of a sudden. Right, I give the Red Sox credit. They recognize that, hey, this thing with Crawford, Gonzalez was not going to work. Let's move on. Let's start over. Let's rebuild. I mean, they're going to shed over close to $263 million of salaries. I don't know how good these prospects are. James Looney's a very good player, but this is all about, this is all about money. It's all about money. Red Sox are going to have to take two steps back before they can move forward. But that's, in sports, that's how, when you try to rebuild a product, that's how you got to do it sometimes. So don't blame them one iota. Dodgers are all in. Dodgers right now, 3 games behind San Francisco. They're just going for it, and I can't blame them. When you add, offensively, when you add Adrian Gonzalez, forget about it, Crawford's out for the season, but when you add Adrian Gonzalez to Hanley Ramirez, Matt Kemp, I mean, it's going to be a pretty potent offense. They're hoping that Beckett, the ballpark, National League West, can revitalize Josh Beckett. Beckett has pitched in the National League before, so he'll certainly be familiar in terms of the National League style and with the hitters and what have you, And Beckett, listen, Beckett won a championship with Boston. You can't knock Beckett if you're a Boston Red Sox fan too much, because he did win a championship with you. So we'll see what happens with that. Victim one of the Jerry Sandusky case is coming out and suing Penn State. This victim one broke this case back in 2009, really opened this case up to the eyes of everybody back in 2009. Again, sexually assaulted allegedly 100 times. If you're Penn State, you set the tone right here now, and you give this victim basically whatever he wants, whatever he wants. If you're really trying to clean up your act, clean up your image, trying to rebuild from this just tragic situation, you give this victim whatever he wants. Yeah, there's no two ways about it. Again, this was the first victim to come out. This transpired, of course, about 8 or 9 years ago, so he's probably about 20 years, 19 or 20 years old. And he's victim one of the Jerry Sandusky case, and Penn State needs to ante up, give this guy whatever he wants as far as money. Russell Wilson came out in a preseason game yesterday with Seattle, 185 yards, 2 touchdowns. Probably going to be the starter. And I'm wondering what Seattle is doing. You give Matt Flynn $10 million, a signing bonus, draft Russell Westbrook. So you really still don't have a quarterback. And I like Russell Wilson. I said when the draft was going on that Russell Wilson would be a guy who down the road is going to surprise a lot of people. And to forget about the fact that he's only 5'10", 5'11", I thought Russell Wilson would be a legit NFL starting quarterback. Maybe not now, but I was a Russell Wilson fan coming out of college. But, again, I don't know what Seattle's doing. I would have no problem with this move had you not gave Matt Flynn $10 million. See, we have some callers on the line. Callers, we just hold on. We'll certainly get to you after this next break here. So before we hit the Redskin report, we'll certainly get to you. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. Matter of fact, before we hit the Redskin report, this call has been waiting for a while, so I'll get to this caller right now. Caller, where are you from? What's on your mind?
Hello, this is Mike from your Bookies Money. How's it going?
Mike, how you doing? How you doing this morning?
Pretty good. Hey, I'd just like to give my first two official picks on the Saturday morning wake-up call here, one college football and one for the NFL, week one.
Oh, hey, listen, we can never start too early, so give them to me. What games are we looking at?
Okay, the first game I'm going to go to is Boise State at Michigan State. Michigan State, they're a 7-point favorite at home, and in my opinion, I think Boise State's getting way overrated for this game. I think the media, the sports books are looking at the Boise State the past few years. Now, if you look at the team this year, I believe they lost about 15 starters from last year's team, including their quarterback, their running back, top defensive linemen that were drafted in the top 3 rounds in the NFL. So you're getting a team that is more of an admiration and what people think I believe is what they've seen the last few years when they went in to beat Virginia Tech and Georgia on neutral fields. Now, if you look at Michigan State, you can go to any publication on the Internet Magazine. Their defense is a top five defense in the nation.
Wow. Oh, without question. Without question.
And the one weakness they do have is obviously Cousins, their quarterback. They're breaking in a new quarterback, but they have a strong offensive line. And I just think they're going to wear out Boise State. I think Boise State's going to take a step back this year. So I'll give out a recommendation to you and your listeners. Take Michigan State minus 7 points.
Give me a score.
I'll give you a score. How about 27-14?
Okay.
Michigan State.
Okay, I can see that. I definitely can see that. Nobody's really talking about Boise State this year, so I can definitely. They did lose a lot. They lost a lot of weapons. I could definitely see them taking a step back for a year. How about the program?
Well, just one more note. Michigan State, they're a really good home team. I believe they've won about 14 straight at home. And that's against some really good quality opponents. In the Big Ten.
Absolutely. How about the pro game?
Okay, the pro game I want to go to is actually the first game of the season, Wednesday, September 5th, the Dallas Cowboys at the New York Giants. And I'm not looking at the spread here. I'm looking at the over-under, which is 47 points. I really believe this game is going to go under. The Cowboys have a lot of problems on offense, so in their skill positions now. Witten, Miles Austin, Dez Bryant, they're all nursing injuries. Now, supposedly they're all coming back, but that's a big if to bring them back that first game and to think they're going to be in, clicking with Romo, putting a lot of points on the board. They have a bad offensive line right now, but the reason I think this is going to go under is that their strength of the team this year is in their secondary. They brought in Brandon Carr, which picked off Rivers two times in the last preseason game. You have Mo Claiborne back there, and you have a full year of training camp, under Ryan's defensive system.
Right.
I think it's going to be a low scoring, and sometimes that first game of the year, the defenses are ahead of the offenses. So I think it's going to take a while in this game for the offenses to get moving, and I just like to recommend under 47 points.
Okay. So Mike's giving us two picks to keep on with the theme of back to football theme. College, he gives us take Michigan State with the points, which is at 7.5, and he's going under. He's going under for Dallas and the Giants. And it makes sense with Dallas and the Giants because you're right. Dallas has a bunch of weapons who are banged up. They don't even know if Witten's even going to play that game. I'm sure he'll try. He'll try to play, but the guy had a spleen injury. So, who knows about his availability in terms of how effective he will be. Miles Austin has had the hamstring pot issues. You mentioned Dez Bryant. So you're right. The Cowboys have a ton of guys, offensive weapons that are banged up. So I can see, you can see a 21-17, 24-21, that type of game. 2017, I can see that with those two particular teams, especially with their ability, and their ability to both get to the quarterbacks.
That's a high number for the first game of the season. And I think Vegas is basing that number on previous years. I know the Giants and Cowboys, especially in Dallas, have had some shootouts, scores in the 30 points. But I just see this year, especially Dallas, as being the opposite. I see them as a defensive first team, at least starting off the season. I'm just impressed with the improvements they made on defense. You get the two middle linebackers out there, the two old heads, Brady James and Brooking, they're gone. Now you have, Sean Lee and the younger Bruce Carter, the linebacker from North Carolina. You have Ware. Just the whole, everything in general, I just like their defense. And I don't see Eli Manning marching up and down the field against them like the last few years. Yes, Manning is going to get his. He always does. But just think they're going to limit them enough, to keep that number, under a high 47.
Right. I definitely could see it. Well, Mike, certainly welcome to the program. I'm sure you'll be getting contacted with us over the course of the season, and we will certainly take your insight on your college and football picks. You enjoy your morning.
Yeah, you too. Thank you. Take care.
No question. So there you go. A couple of listen, that's what we're doing this year. I'm glad he called, because that is a taste of what the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call is going to look like coming up. Season premiere of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call will be September 5th. Okay, September 5th. I know I said September 7th, but September 5th, we're going to do a special leading up to the Dallas-New York Giant game, which will be this Wednesday. We're going to do a special on that. We'll do our NFC East preview special of the division, and look at the NFL season all around. Hopefully I can get my award-winning panel, my esteemed panel, to come in and talk some NFL football, fantasy, as well as NFL. So got a lot to do. As far as the countdown of football. Football, you can start to smell it now, because, you know, that third preseason game, I'll be a little concerned, by the way, a little preseason football here. It's from New England, and I'll certainly take heed of this as a having Tom Brady on one of my fantasy teams. That offensive line does not look good right now. The Jets and the Bills both have very good defensive lines, especially the Bills. Bills have one of the best defensive lines in the league. Jets have what they think is an improving defensive line. It remains to be seen, but still, they still have some players, Calvin Pace, that can do some damage. So I'll be a little concerned if I'm Tom Brady and the rest of that New England offense. When we return, Luck and RG3, we'll talk about this matchup of top two picks. Also, we have a preview of the AFC North, and much, much more in this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back. After 11 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, Cyril Quinn taking you until 12 o'clock as we discuss the world of sports. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Redskins report. Redskins are going to play Indianapolis, of course, tonight in a matchup where, of course, all the talk is going to be about RG3 and Andrew Luck. The two top picks in this year's past draft, they will forever be intertwined throughout the course of their respective careers as being compared to each other. It's been downplayed. This situation has been downplayed by both guys, of course. You know, both guys are quality people, as well as hopefully for the Redskins, future superstar quarterbacks. Listen. As a Redskins fan, and I will make no bones about this, and I don't care what anybody thinks about this, if the Redskins had the number one pick, I would have taken Andrew Luck. Okay, I think Luck is going to be not a great pro. I just think Luck is like I just you know even just watch him in the preseason. you know, seeing plays before they happen, bouncing back from interceptions. I just think he's going to be just going to be off the charts. Very interesting how to see how RG3 handles this. Now, you know, he'll say all the right things over the course of the week. Will he try to make too many plays? Will he try to, you know, will he play within himself? So it'll be a very interesting preseason game. Of course, this is the dress rehearsal before the regular season starts. Expect to see the starters, RG3, play into the third quarter on both sides. Redskins, of course, have a number, a couple of issues. I mean, besides the offensive line, the running back situation, how many of these running backs are they going to keep? You would have to think out of Evan Royster, Tim Hightower, Roy Hill Jr., and Alfred Morris, that one of those guys, all four of those guys, are not going to be on the team. Alfred Morris had had a couple of nice runs in last week's preseason game. He's a rookie. Evan Royster and Roy Hill Jr. will not play in this particular game with a couple of injuries. Again, I don't know how Shanahan is going to handle this. Hightower's on the team. I think that goes without saying. Hightower will be on the team. Again, I think this is a toss up between, you know, Royster. I mean, who knows between it could come down probably. I would say Hightower and Helu Jr. will be on the team. It'll probably come down between Royster, Alfred Morris. Or it could be between, you know, Royster, Alfred Morris, and Helu Jr. for two of those three spots. I mean, they're basically in the same boat, those particular three running backs. I know Shanahan is high on Hightower and thinks that, you know, had he not gotten hurt, could have had a pretty good year. So I think you can kind of pencil him in terms of being on the team. Whether or not he's going to start, who knows. But, yeah, I mean, he's going to be on the roster. Those other three, two of them will be on there, but all four of them are not making the team. First cuts, of course, are on Monday. So you'll get a sense of what this roster is going to look like, your first sense of what this roster was going to look like come Monday when the first cuts are made. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we will preview the AFC North. Can Pittsburgh return to the Super Bowl, or is it Cincinnati's time to shine in that AFC North division? We'll talk about that and much, much more in this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. Back to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. As we continue counting down to football, you've already heard a handicapper give his thoughts or in a couple games, pro and college. We continue to preview the NFL, these divisions. We're going to do the NFC East next week on our show next Wednesday, and we'll cap off, we'll finish off these divisions. We'll cap off our countdown to kickoff with the AFC South and the AFC West. But right now, we go to the AFC North, and where I think it might be a change in the guard team to beat. No, not the Pittsburgh Steelers, not the Baltimore Ravens. Team to beat in this division, Cincinnati Bengals, formerly known as the Cincinnati Bungles. The Bengals have, to me, one of the better young offenses in all of football in terms of combination of quarterback, wide receiver, Andy Dalton, A.J. Green, as dynamic of a wide receiver quarterback combination as there is in the NFL under, 25 and under. Both these guys have a chance to be Pro Bowlers. A.J. Green has a chance to be all pro. I mean, he's that good. Had a great rookie season. Jermaine Gresham, the tight end, I think is going to have a breakout year for the Bengals. They lost Cedric Benson, who had some productive seasons in the past couple of years, but Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, I think is a more than adequate replacement for Cedric Benson. Question is about Cincinnati. Can they get over the hump as far as going against Pittsburgh and Baltimore? Last year, despite the fact that they had a good year, made the playoffs, they were 0-4 against both Pittsburgh and Baltimore. That will not be the case this year. I think Cincinnati has a really good defense. Remember, Leon Hall is coming back. They drafted Drake Kirkpatrick, also added Terrence Newman, so the secondary should be fine. Carlos Dunlap is certainly one of the better pass rushers. Not too many stars on their defense, but again, last year they were a top 10 defense. They were a top 10 defense, and this year I don't see much fall off, if any at all, in regards to their defense. Question about Cincinnati is, can they take on the role as being the hunted? Can they take on the role as being, there are going to be a lot of publications going to have them as, favorites to win that division. Pittsburgh and Baltimore are used to it. It means nothing for teams to be coming after them. But it's a little bit different when you are expected to have some success. Cincinnati has not had a history of putting together back-to-back quality seasons. Again, I think that trend will be bucked this year. Looking at their schedule, need to get off to a good start. It starts off, they start out at Baltimore, which will be a huge game. From there, they go home to Cleveland, home at Washington, at Jacksonville, home against Miami, and then at Cleveland. They should be 5-1, 4-2 minimum. You prefer 5-1. They definitely should be 4-2 with those first six games of their season. The last six games of their season are brutal. They're talking at San Diego, home to Dallas, at Philadelphia, at Pittsburgh, home to Baltimore. So they need to get off to a fast start. I think they're going 10-6, and I think that they will indeed win this division. Next in line, the Pittsburgh Steelers. Pittsburgh comes in with a very different take on, a very different identity on how they're going to approach the season. They want to go more offense, more passing, more pass first team. Mike Wallace signs his tender, so you have an excellent trio of receivers in Wallace, Antonio Brown, and Emmanuel Sanders. Not to forget about Heath Shuler at the tight end. Heath Miller, at the tight end position. Pittsburgh wants to throw the ball all over the place. Mendenhall was of course taken off the PUP list last week, but who knows how long it will take him to be ready for the season. But you still have Jonathan Dwyer, Isaac Redman. They should be fine with their running game. Again, I don't like the question to me about Pittsburgh is not so much it's a couple things: offensive philosophy and identity, and also defense. This is the first year I can remember in a long time where there are legit question marks about the Pittsburgh defense. Last year, all the stats looked good as far as points allowed, yards allowed, rushing yards. This is not the same Pittsburgh defense that we've grown accustomed to seeing when they've won Super Bowls, when they've been to the Super Bowl. It's not. It's just that's all there is to it. Lamar Woodley's tremendous. Troy Polamalu's still obviously a Pro Bowl caliber player, but though a couple of people think he's has lost a step. James Harrison is aging. There's no question about it. The secondary is not very good with Ike Taylor. Now you're looking at the secondary with Ike Taylor, Keenan Lewis, all your starting cornerbacks. I don't know. I just don't like if I'm an opposing offense in that division or facing Pittsburgh, I don't have the same fear of the Pittsburgh defense that I once had. I just don't. And again, I don't think the Pittsburgh defense was a vintage Pittsburgh defense last year. Sometimes those numbers can be deceiving, and I think they were deceiving last year. When teams had to go down the field against Pittsburgh, Baltimore did it twice. Okay, when they swept Pittsburgh, you saw what Denver did in the playoffs. When plays had to be made against that defense, the defense could not stop other teams from getting to where they wanted to be at. Bottom line. I mean, offensively, again, I think they'll be very good. Question mark about Bruce Arians and Todd Haley. I'm not making Todd Haley out to be, you know, Bill Walsh. Bruce Arians out to be Bill Walsh. But, you know, there was a comfort level by Roethlisberger. Roethlisberger did not want Arians out. And you wonder, you know, will Todd Haley rub Roethlisberger the wrong way as far as his in-your-face approach? He's a rah-rah guy, which kind of got him fired in Kansas City. So, but again, I expect the offense to be fine. Can they put up enough points to compensate for their defense? Remains to be seen. I think they're 9-7. I'm looking at their schedule. Tough opening when you talk about at Denver, home to the Jets, at Oakland, home to Philadelphia, at Tennessee, and then at Cincinnati. That's a tough opening to a schedule. They end at Baltimore, home to San Diego, at Dallas, home to Cincinnati, home to Cleveland. So a tough beginning and a tough ending to a schedule. I think they're 9-7. I think they'll be a playoff contender, but I don't think that this is a Super Bowl caliber team that's capable of getting to a Super Bowl or certainly winning a Super Bowl. Baltimore, to me, is the mystery team in this division. I think Baltimore is in the same spot as Pittsburgh as far as the question marks on defense with the age and also the direction of their offense. Ray Rice is their best offensive player. Matter of fact, I think at this point, Ray Rice is their best player, period. But, you know, there's a lot of talk that they want to hand the keys over to Joe Flacco and become more pass-oriented. My question is, where are the receivers? I mean, Torrey Smith, Anquan Boldin, Jacoby Ford, Jacoby Jones. Those names don't exactly, you know, put fear into a defensive coordinator, to be honest with you. Torrey Smith, to me, on a good team, is a number three receiver. He's a speed guy who's a number three receiver. Anquan Boldin, at this stage in his career, solid number two, but no longer the number one type player he once was 2 or 3 years ago. Offensive line has question marks with the age of McKinney and Matt Burke and their defense. I mean, they have some – listen, we cannot discount the loss of Terrell Suggs. Terrell Suggs was the defensive player of the year last year. They still have Nata, who is one of the best defensive players in the league. Ray Lewis and Reed are not getting any younger. And I would put any amount of money that one of those guys, if not both of them, will miss time over the course of this season. Again, I wonder what direction Baltimore is going in as far as their identity offensively. We know what they want to do defensively. Want to force turnovers. They want to stop the run. But offensively, you know, if you're going to give Joe Flacco the keys to the car, you got to have some gas in the car. And again, I just don't see the explosiveness. To me, I'm force-feeding Ray Rice and building the offense around him. Don't see the explosiveness with that offense in order to give Joe Flacco just full reign, you know, just full control of what they're doing. Looking at their schedule, tough opening three games at Cincinnati home, at Philadelphia, home to New England. if they're going to do anything, if they're going to make the playoffs, this is going to be the key part of their schedule. Home to Cleveland, at Kansas City, home to Dallas, at Houston, at Cleveland, home to Oakland. That's they're going to have to run through that part of their schedule, because their November December schedule is as tough as there is in the NFL. I mean, they have two games against Pittsburgh, they have a game at Cincinnati, they're at San Diego, home to Denver, host the Giants. I think Baltimore is an 8-8 team. I don't like this team. I don't think they don't scare me offensively, even though I think Flacco's is very good. Defensively, I think they're going to take a step back. Listen, this division, and the reason why I'm picking Cincinnati to win this division is Pittsburgh and Baltimore have more question marks entering this season than they've ever had, I would say, in the past four or five seasons, to be honest with you. So this is like a perfect storm for a team like Cincinnati to come out on top of this division. Forget about Cleveland. Cleveland is one of the worst teams in football. I got two words for Cleveland fans, DirecTV. I mean, look at Cleveland's skill position players. Joshua Cribbs, Greg Little, Brandon Whedon. Trent Richardson should be back for opening week. But Cleveland's just, they just got awful. I would not be surprised if Cleveland was 0-16. It would not shock me. That's how bad they are. So I'll give them two wins just to be nice. To be kind, I'll give them two wins. 2-14, but they could be the worst team in all football, easily. They could be the worst team. So I'm taking Cincinnati to win the division. I'm taking Pittsburgh to go 9-7. Baltimore, both Pittsburgh and Baltimore, to me, take steps back. 9-7. Baltimore will be 8-8, and Cleveland to bring up the rear at 2-14. When we return on this latest edition of Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, we will talk about doings down in Augusta. What are my thoughts on Augusta letting two women members in? What does it really mean? Does it help golf, hurt golf? I'll give you my perspective on that. And also, we'll conclude our college football preview with last year's defending national champions. That's coming up and much, much more in this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back. Minutes after the 11 o'clock on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, 347-215-6180 is your call number. This past week, Augusta, after 80 years of ignorance, finally let in two members to Augusta National, to their golf club. Condoleezza Rice and Dawna Moore. Of course, everybody knows who Condoleezza Rice is, former Secretary of State. Dawna Moore is a business executive. And, you know, when I heard about this, you know, I thought about, I was like, you know, that's nice. I didn't think too much of it, to be honest with you, because it's, first of all, it should have been done years, and like, it's about 30 or 40 years too late, as far as I'm concerned, for me to take it seriously. And to be honest with you, if I'm a female who can afford to have a golf executive golf membership, I wouldn't apply to be a member of the Masters Golf Club, to Augusta National. I just wouldn't. They're doing it for what reason? To make themselves look good. I don't know what, like, the thing about it is, I don't know what Augusta's or the Masters' intentions are. The Masters Golf Tournament, the most famous golf tournament in golf history, they make their own rules. They could care less about what you and I think about them, to be honest with you. They could care less if CBS covered the event. They the Masters is really a separate entity from golf. And I can't, like, it's disappointing that the PGA allows the Masters to be in some ways bigger than their sport, because the Masters is the only golf club, the only golf tournament in where the PGA allowed for all these years, the PGA would, you know, still recognize it as a tournament, despite the fact that they were not letting women in their, you know, letting women become members of their clubs. I mean, it was the only one. I mean, that and you know, the PGA basically, Tim Fitchin, PGA basically came out saying, you know, it's the Masters. I mean, we can, you know, we, they are who they are. Like, they're basically bigger than the sport. So, to me, golf should have had the guts to stand up to the Masters after all these years and say, hey, you know what, we're not going to recognize your tournament as a legit tournament unless you allow women to become members. But besides that, again, if you're a woman, would you really want to become a member of this club? I mean, think about it. I mean, to me, this is window dressing. I mean, they're doing this. This is, you know, this is one of these moves that, you know, this is the guy who donates to charity but really could care less about people less privileged than he is. That's what it is. It just looks good on the surface. This doesn't mean anything. You know, I kept hearing, oh, this is historic for golf and it's what a, you know, this. Everybody wins. Like, who wins? I mean, really, does golf win? How does golf win with this move? That women are now allowed to go to become, that women are allowed into Augusta National, become members of Augusta National. How does golf win? Now, people, Tim Fitchins of the world, they're not going to be answering questions about this. So maybe, does golf consider that a win? Maybe they consider that a win. The fact that we don't have to answer, the fact that we're not going to be talking about this. But it doesn't impact the sport. Should have happened 30 again. Should have happened 40, 50 years ago. 30 or 40 years ago. Again, if I'm a female, I wouldn't want any part of Augusta National. Becoming a member of Augusta National. Not any part of it. You didn't want me then, you know, so why do you want to be a part of something that, why would you want to be a part of an establishment that really doesn't want you there? They don't want women there. They're doing it because, you know, they're doing it just because they make themselves look good. They care less about one women membership. They're doing it, and it's certainly not for money. They don't need women's money. They don't need Condoleezza Rice's money or Dolores Darla Moore's money. It's not about money. Publicity, positive publicity? No. Again, this is the Masters could care less about what you and I think about them. They care less about, see, the Masters controls everything. Augusta controls everything about the Masters. Excuse me. I mean, CBS does the broadcast, but Augusta Golf Club, Augusta National, calls the shots. So, I, you know, took 80 years. You know, good job. I just, I didn't see this significance that everybody else sees. That maybe it's just me. 49 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, when we return, we'll preview the Alabama Crimson Tide on our conclusion of National Championship Contenders. We'll be right back. Minutes after the 11 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, as we draw to a conclusion of our college championship contender preview, college football preview, championship contenders. We're going, of course, through USC, and Michigan State and Georgia, just to name a few, Oklahoma as well, Florida State. We get to Alabama now. Alabama, the defending national champions. Alabama coming off a 21-0 shutout of LSU, of rival LSU in the national BCS championship game. They'll return a bulk of their offense, including one of the best offensive lines in the country, led by Barrett Jones, who, again, should be first-team All-American. A.J. McCarron, who played very well in that championship game, comes back. Certainly, they had to replace Trent Richardson and a couple of their receivers, but their receivers will probably be as good this year as they were last year. Question mark about Alabama is, of course, it's hard to repeat, especially in the SEC, but defensively. I mean, last year they had a historic defense. I mean, defensively, they gave up 8 points a game, 184 yards a total offensive game. Their linebackers are not going to be as good. Or secondary will not be as good as it was last year. I mean, you know, Drake or Patrick, they replaced a number of pros coming off that, off the secondary and linebacking core. I mean, Courtney Upshaw, those guys, Hightower, those guys have moved on to the pros. But again, it will not be there. Defensively, they still return enough talent. They return more talent defensively than they did coming off the national in 2010. And that year, they were 10-3. They were 10-10. I think Alabama will be better than what they were following their championship year 2009. They lost when they won the national championship in 2009. They lost a ton of talent on the defensive end, and you know, lost three games. They will not lose three games this year. I think Alabama is more than capable of repeating. Now, schedule's still tough. I mean, next week they kick off with playing against Michigan. I think they'll beat Michigan because again, the SEC does not lose these games against interconference. SEC doesn't lose these games. Whereas Alabama playing Virginia Tech, whereas LSU against Oregon, they dominate these games. I think it'll be a very good game. I think they'll win that game. They have some major tests at Arkansas, at LSU, and of course the Iron Bowl on November 24th, Thanksgiving weekend. I think Alabama plays in the SEC championship. I think they're better than LSU. I think the Tyrone Mathieu suspension gives the edge to Alabama over LSU. That's how close these teams are. I like A.J. McCarron. I like the offense. Listen, Trent Richardson was a tremendous player. But again, It's a running back. Eddie Lacy last year averaged 7 yards a carry. It's not a major, major drop-off. And again, I think the defense will be nobody outside LSU and Alabama recruit defensive talent better than any team in the country. There are guys who are chomping at the bit to come off the Alabama bench defensively who are waiting for those other guys to graduate. Defensively, again, they might give up 12 points a game this year. They may not give up only just 8. Maybe they give up 11 or 12. Still think that their defense will be tremendous. But, Alabama being on that handful of teams, I think that can actually win the national championship. Will they win it? Probably not. I think they will definitely play in the BCS game, but to try to repeat in this year, in this day and age, in the SEC might be asking too much. But will I be surprised if they repeat it? No, not at all. Saban's a dynamic coach. You know, 3 national championships. Again, I think they will be better than what they were following their championship year. Following their championship year 2009, they will not lose 3 games. At worst, maybe they'll lose probably 1, at worst 2 games. At worst, but there's no way they're losing 3 games like they did in that 2010 season. Look what Alabama's done in the SEC in 5 years: 32-8. 32-8 in the last 5 years. So they've dominated the competition in the SEC. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. Again, a few program notes for future programs. Season premiere of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call will be a two-part show. We'll kick it off September. It'll be kicked off September 5th with the Dallas New York Giant game. We'll do an NFL preview, fantasy football preview special with that. We'll also that will extend to September 8th, being the official kickoff of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Part 2 of that, we'll do our picks, NFL picks. We'll look at college football. We'll look at some college football as well. We'll have a ton of guests on. We'll look at again, we'll look at the NFL season and continue to look at baseball as we head down the stretch run of these games. St. Louis is engaged in the series, and St. Louis won last night, but Cincinnati's in total control of that particular division. But again, we have a lot to do. You know, we have a lot to do coming in this fall. The Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, certainly excited about the show and the direction that the show is moving into. We have the NFL show again. Will start probably, I would say, September 10th or 11th, that Monday or Tuesday following the opening weekend of NFL games. So then we'll certainly look back at the week's games and look at, and certainly if it is on Monday night, we'll look at Monday night football, the Monday night football games, which they'll have their opening weekend doubleheader as they always do on Monday night, which ESPN will carry those games. We'll probably do the NFL show on that particular Tuesday, so we can recap all the games and not just recap all the previous week's games. But again, certainly looking forward to this season, this 5th season. Amazing. We've been together 5 years of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Stay tuned for that. Stay tuned for any updates on my Twitter page. Follow me on Twitter page at William Gerald or Facebook.com/SurrealQuinn. So long. Have a great weekend. I'll see you next time.